What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 167 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight. We are going to continue our series going over the weapons that you can receive from the Umbral Engrams. We are going to try to finish it up this episode. Actually, because some of the weapons have been brought back from previous seasons, we actually have a bunch of them already done in some relatively recent podcasts. So we're going to point you in that direction. For the ones that have been done in the last couple months, and then for the ones that we have not done in quite a while, we are going to revisit them. So we've got a 5-5 split, so it's going to be a nice little episode. But first, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing this evening, Kit?
Well, I'm doing pretty excellent. My wife made a huge bowl of homemade puppy chow last night, so as you can imagine, my life is pretty great right now. Just trying to stay sane in crazy times. How about you?
Yeah, definitely doing the same. Staying busy with work, staying busy playing Destiny, staying busy with the immense amount of Twitter drama that has erupted in the Destiny community. Sexual assault victims are coming forward left and right, and people that we thought were outstanding members of the community, it turns out we're maybe not so outstanding. It's been interesting. I basically stayed mostly on the sidelines with this, being neither a victim nor a perpetrator. I have not much to add other than just trying to amplify the voices of the people who have suffered, and basically unfollowing the people as they get outed as being tremendous shitbirds.
Yeah,
so that's been the extent of it. But it has been eye-opening how widespread. I mean, I think everybody knew that it was pervasive in the gaming community, but I don't know if maybe, you know, like I personally thought that maybe the Destiny community was a little bit better than the gaming community as a whole, but it turns out that, in fact, there are still a bunch of shitty people in this community, too.
You know, I mean, I always knew that there were a lot of people who just were, like, in terms of, like, verbal messages. Like, I knew that there were people out there doing, you know, harassing people, just saying awful, awful stuff. And, you know, I guess it's something that it's, to a certain extent, like, what can you do? Like, people are just going to be awful on the internet and it's very hard to get rid of all of those people. But yeah, the depth of awful stuff that has not been said but has been done is pretty, I guess I don't want to say that it's shocking. It's deeply saddening, but in this day and age, I guess I just don't find it shocking. Which is not, I guess it's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing in that, like, people are starting to be more comfortable coming out and talking about this stuff, which is good. But it's bad because I don't want to become desensitized to this. And so it's kind of been a balancing act, trying to show some support, but also watching out for, you know, my own mental state. And so that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Well, it'll this type of event is happening more and more often, right? Like, it used to be that people would go 20, 25 years before anything would come out about what they had done. And by that point in time, it's really too late. And, you know, you also don't know, like, some of the stuff people do when they're younger, you don't know how their lives have changed as they got older. And they could be a completely different person 25 years down the road from some of the things, particularly, you know, using racist language and, you know, stuff like that. But now it seems like every 6 months or every year or so, there's a pretty big wave of people getting outed. And I think that it's going to start making it readily apparent that you can't get away with this type of stuff anymore. Like, people aren't, they're still scared to speak up, but they certainly, there's a much wider support network now than there ever has been before. And if you continue to, act as a predator, it's going to be harder and harder for you to get away with it, because pretty Thank much God. The first time it happens, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get outed. So there are definitely positives to this process, and I know it's rough mentally, especially for the victims who have to, you know, relive that type of trauma every time they see it on Twitter, especially when they're coming to a community to escape from that type of thing. But the good news is that it will eventually hit a tipping point, as we talked about with racism several episodes ago, where eventually it will get to the point where that stuff just isn't accepted, and the people who do it are immediately outcast and immediately ostracized, and, you know, eventually that type of behavior dies out. I mean, it's humans are animals is what it comes down to. And eventually they get trained. And if they get punished for doing bad things, then eventually most people, the vast majority, will you know, not take advantage of those things. So we hope.
Indeed.
All right. Well, That's I feel like we've had a number of episodes recently. We've had to take a very serious tone right off the bat. I'm hopeful that going through the rest of summer, we'll be able to talk more lightly about what is Destiny and the game that we are playing for enjoyment, not for lectures or life lessons or anything like that. So
Yeah.
hopefully we won't have to do too many more of these.
Well, you know, I mean, it'll be real easy for us to not have to talk about it if people will just, like, stop being complete shits.
Not do it. Yeah, guys, if you could just not sexually harass people and not be racist, that would be super great. It would make things a lot easier
Yeah,
for
that would be
everyone.
great. Yeah, no, like, seriously, be kind to each other out there. Let's talk about someone who's been really kind to us here. I'm gonna segue over, and I want to throw a big shout out to our new patron, Slingblade. Thank you so much for jumping on the patron train. Really appreciate the support. You know, as I've said, I think every episode that I've said a thank you. You know, we know that these are trying times in a lot of ways for a lot of different people right now. And so, you know, every person out there who's continued to support us by listening, by becoming a patron, by being a sponsor, we really appreciate you. It's just tremendous. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got another couple of reviews placed in. Sorry, I shouldn't say reviews. We got ratings placed in. Have now started keeping track of the ratings. We have 154 ratings on Apple Podcast, and that's just for the United States. If you include the rest of the world, I think we're up to like 190, which is pretty incredible. We don't have any reviews left over, so we are going to just move right into the meat and potatoes of the podcast, unless you have anything else that you'd like to add in the housekeeping section.
I mentioned a sponsor, and so I do also want to throw in, you know, our standard shout out to ZenSoCal, who's been an ongoing sponsor of the podcast. He's a regular guardian, just like all of you listening, and he's been just incredibly generous to us, keeping us ad and sponsor free, outside of guardians like yourself. So we're kind of, I guess we're like the public radio of Destiny podcasts in that regard.
NPR or PBS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
Not the most
like
popular podcast out there, but we
it.
consistently put out quality content, and that's what matters.
That's right. That's what matters. We're not the C-SPAN, at least. There's that.
Yeah, we don't bore you to sleep. Okay, so time to talk weapons. Is that correct?
That's where we're at. Let's do it.
So there are 10 weapons that are in the Umbral Engram that are not the pyramid focused weapons. They're divided into two groups. They're the Drifter focused weapons, which is basically Gambit Prime, Reckoning, and Gambit weapons. There's only four of those, and then there's the Legacy weapons, which are just weapons they brought back from previous seasons. They mentioned that, you know, the Sundial weapons, for example, are going to go away, the Season Pass weapons are going to go away, but they'll find a way to put them back in. So, interestingly, we have a perfect 5-5 split of five weapons that we have talked about relatively recently. And that we felt like it would be doing a disservice to basically just be rehashing those breakdowns. So we want to point you to the appropriate episodes for those breakdowns, if you'll bear with me here. So we have two Seventh Seraph weapons from last season that came back. It's the CQC 12, the shotgun, and the YV7, which is the submachine gun. Those we discuss in episode 156 of the Massive Breakdown podcast. So if you go back and listen to 156 of the episode 156 of the Massive Breakdown podcast, you will hear our entire Seventh Seraph weapons discussion. Do you have anything to add on those, Kutch, before we move on? Do you think those weapons are worth chasing?
So, that's really what I wanted to add here is personally, I'm going to say that those two are kind of a pass for me. I think that even if you like those archetypes, there are better options out there that hopefully you already have. And I feel like you're going to be much better off spending your time focusing on some of the other weapons we're going to talk about today, maybe filling in some gaps in your loadout, especially if you're a newer player who maybe has missed some of these weapons in the past. Now is the time. Now is definitely the time to get your hands on some good stuff.
Yeah, I would say that absolutely you can ignore the submachine gun in its entirety. Submachine guns are terrible right now across the
Yep.
board. The shotgun has some benefits to it. I would think the shotgun's a pretty decent shotgun. I would not say that it is a must-have. I would not say that you should grind for it, but if you get a good roll on it, the shotgun is pretty fair and has some pretty decent perks. So the shotgun, I would say, is definitely a pretty decent weapon. You can go for that one. And then the next three are all Gambit Prime weapons, or I guess It's two Gambit Prime weapons and a Reckoning exclusive weapon. Gnawing Hunger is a 600 RPM auto rifle. It is extremely good, arguably one of the best legendary primaries in the Crucible
Phenomenal.
right now. We discussed it in the Adaptive ARs breakdown episode, which is episode 158. So go listen to that. We talked about Gnawing Hunger. We also talked about all the other legendary adaptive 600 RPM auto rifles that you could grab. Gnawing Hunger is extraordinarily good, has some really crazy rolls. You can absolutely shred with it. It is also statistically just pretty much across the board one of the best auto rifles you can have. So I would 100% go back and listen to that episode and then start grinding it out. I think that is probably the most popular weapon to grind out right now from these Ingrams.
Yeah, absolutely. Second, that one, that's one I'm going to be chasing all season, so for sure. We've also got in that same Ingram, we've got Nightwatch, which is a scout rifle, and Lonesome, which is a sidearm. And we broke those both down in episode 160. So even more recent, not too long ago at all here. So definitely check that episode out for those two weapons. What's your take on those two? Worth chasing, or maybe just hanging on to one if you happen to get lucky?
I think Lonesome is pretty decent. It is one of the precision archetype sidearms, which means that it can kill in its optimal TTK with two crits and two bodies, which makes it super easy to use. It's a little bit, I think precision sidearms are a little bit underrated because the optimal TTK isn't tremendously fast. It's only 0.7 seconds, and you've got drain down there at 0.6 seconds, but drain requires four crits. And the precision sidearms have greater range than Drang as well, which is pretty nice. The base range on it is 62, Drang's is 48. They do have pretty terrible stability, but they have high aim assist, which helps them out. I think it's pretty good. I have seen people use it effectively. It has some decent rolls on it. It's kind of like what I said about the Seven Seraph shotgun. Like, I'm not gonna grind out a lonesome roll, especially because we know that we have. Oh, I guess I shouldn't talk about that. That's a spoiler. Never mind. Ignore that. Ignore that. But I would not, break my back grinding out a lonesome roll. However, I do think it's a pretty decent gun and it has some good perks, and I would probably grab myself one or two good rolls. And I feel the same about Nightwatch. Nightwatch is a lightweight scout rifle, which means it's the Midar archetype of scout rifle, except for it's legendary. Again, has good rolls, is a very usable gun statistically, is a pretty decent gun for its class. The problem, of course, is that it is a scout rifle, and scout rifles right now are not exactly the most usable weapons in PvP or PvE. So I don't know if it's going to become your main primary, but as with all weapons that have the capability to roll good perks, I recommend getting a roll or two, putting them in the vault, and waiting for Bungie to inevitably decide that it is scout rifles' time to shine in the meta, and then buffing them up an absurd amount and letting them dominate.
Yep, that day will undoubtedly come again. It's been a couple of years, I think, since scout rifles have really been powerful in any way. The downside for me of really picking up any scout rifle is that if scout rifles do get strong, I'm almost certainly going to be using Mida in PvP, and very likely in PvE as well, because the gun is just stupidly good. Even after multiple nerfs, that gun is just ridiculously strong. So it's tough for me to worry too much about scouts, unless there's something unique about them, like Randy's throwing knife. But Lonesome, I think I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on. Those guns, I think, can sidearms have a definitely have a place right now. Shotguns have been nerfed enough that you can very easily punish someone who is maybe playing badly, or who you're able to outmaneuver into trying to cross some open ground to get to you, and it's very easy to take them down with a sidearm. So Lonesome is certainly one good option if you don't like some of the other archetypes that we've recommended.
Yeah, I would say going back just really quickly to you're talking about Mida, that is almost the problem with Mida being in the game, is that statistically it's just the best lightweight scout rifle. It's the best a lightweight scout rifle could ever be, right? And then it has a bunch of really useful perks on top of that, which makes it completely dominant. So
Yeah.
basically where Nightwatch will come into play is if the Mida archetype becomes dominant again, and you don't want to use your exotic slot on Mida, you're going to try to make a Mida light or a, poor man's Mida out of Nightwatch, and hope that you can do it. Which you could probably, you're not going to be able to come close to 100 aim assist because nothing ever can. But Mida also brings up an interesting way that Bungie has kind of differentiated some exotics. So what they used to do back in D1 is they would make some exotics that were just statistically very, very good versions of an archetype, and then they would give them like the best perks on that archetype, and they'd be like, "This is an exotic, right?" And Mida was kind of that.
Yeah.
They just like overloaded a bunch of really basic perks onto a gun, and then they maxed out all the stats. And they were like, "This is an exotic," and they've kind of done it a little bit in D2. Like Borealis is kind of like that, where its actual exotic perk is pretty damn near useless for PvP. So in order to make it great, they were like, "This is an aggressive sniper rifle, but all the stats are incredible," right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see when they do that, because that is one way to make weapons exotic, is it's just flat out the best gun in its archetype, statistically. And then the other way to make exotics is like what you do with Skybrand or Xerath, their sweet business, where it's or trace rifles, where it's a completely unique type of gun. There's no other gun like it in the game. And what's interesting is they did that with Queensbreaker's bow in D1, but then in D2, they made those, linear fusion rifles, and they were a legendary. So I would imagine that probably in the next couple of years, we're going to start to see trace rifles
Yeah.
that are legendary as well.
Yeah, I've been waiting for that day, to be honest with you. I'm almost surprised it hasn't come yet, but maybe next year.
I would be willing to bet that it will that within a year we will see a legendary trace rifle, which would be good because I think the trace rifles are fantastic outside of their ammo problems. Wave Splitter in particular is incredibly good, and I look forward to being able to run one without wasting my exotic slot, because really the only thing that makes them exotic right now, it's not their performance, it's just the fact that they are a unique type of gun.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely time to let them be legendary.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's get back on track. I think we've covered the weapons from that we've covered the weapons that we've already covered. Boy, that worked out.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, like, 'cause like I don't want to make it seem like we don't want to do the breakdown again. It's just I felt really, really weird about breaking down guns on this podcast, which like you guys listen to, but which we literally just 5 episodes ago like broke down the guns,
Yeah.
and it's like, or like less than 10 episodes ago, less than 2 months ago, we broke down these guns, and it's like I really don't want to just like go back and rehash exactly what I said. But the other ones that we're going to talk about, we have several. We have 5 of them for you. We have 2 primaries, a special, and 2 heavies. It's been quite a bit of time since we've talked about these, in several seasons, over a year in some instances, almost 2 years in some instances. So
Yeah.
I think it's fair for us to talk about the remaining weapons. We have, like I said, 2 primaries. It's going to be a sidearm and a scout rifle. The sidearm is Breach Light from Season of Dawn.
Yeah.
It was one of the weapons that came with the sundial. It is an aggressive sidearm, aggressive burst sidearm, which means it is one of those sidearms that shoots a burst of 2 shots with 2 frames in between them. It is kinetic. This gun is, I think it's underrated. Like most sidearms actually right now, I think are underrated, but this gun is one of the easiest weapons to kill with in the game. Just like flat out. It doesn't have great range, which is unfortunate, but the optimal time to kill takes 3 crits, 2 body shots. The body shot time to kill just takes 6 body shots. So it's just 3 bursts. So as long as you hit your shots, you're basically guaranteed to get a kill in 3 bursts, which is a 0.83 second time to kill, which is as fast as most weapons, optimal time to kill. So you're limited to being basically like sub 12 meters with it, where you get that range, but it's freaking fantastic, and it has high range for a sub or for a sidearm. It has high aim assist, has decent mag size. Obviously, the stability and recoil direction are not great. The reload speed's not great. The low, the handling's not great. But I actually think this gun, and I've used this gun a lot, I actually think it's probably my second favorite sidearm. Don't talk to me about Drang, especially Van Holden, because I know Van Holden is gonna complain to me when I say this, because he loves Drang more than anything. I love the burst sidearms. The Last Dance is by far my go-to. I have one with moving target and kill clip that I absolutely love. My second favorite sidearm is one of these. It's a Breach Light that I have that sits in my kinetic slot when I don't want to use, my energy slot for a sidearm. It's freaking phenomenal. I can basically just spam body shots at people and get really fast kills, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm also a big fan of this of this sidearm, along with Smuggler's Word. I've got a few of both of those that I hang on to, and every now and then I break them out when I'm in the mood for some sidearm play. I think they are super strong, and despite their stats, I think they're extremely easy to use, especially if you get some good perks. The stability is not great. Recoil direction is okay. It's not bad. But just that aside, I think they're so easy to use, especially when you're within your intended range. Like you can be spamming shots from a little further out and get some lucky hits to wear somebody down or clean up a kill. But for the most part, you do want to make sure you're within your intended range. And if you are, I mean, it just shreds. It just takes people apart.
Yeah, so let's talk perks really fast. We mentioned that it already has pretty decent range. If you're on PC and you're using mouse and keyboard and stability isn't really an issue for you, you got that tight burst spread, then sure, try to step up and get a little bit more additional range. If you max range out, you're probably going to get 1 to 2 meters more on the lethal kill range, which can be useful when your lethal kill range is only, when your lethal kill range is sub 15 meters, it can be useful to try to push it up closer to 15 meters. So that can mean life or death. Against the shotgunner. I've tried multiple variations of this sub the sidearm. Keep wanting to say submachine gun for some reason, I don't know why. But I've tried multiple variations of the sidearm. I've tried a max range, max stability, combination of both. I personally find that leaning heavier on stability worked better for me as a controller player. Doesn't necessarily have to be max stability, but I like to lean heavier in the stability direction. So that meant something like chambered compensator, polygonal rifling, small bore, corkscrew rifling, and then in the magazine, also something that helps stability a little bit. Tactical mag, flared magwell, maybe not steady rounds, because steady rounds, you swing the pendulum a little bit far in the other direction and it starts to hurt your range. So I'd put that as like a third option. But my god roll would be chambered compensator and then like tactical mag for the barrel and magazine.
I would definitely agree with that. I would say if you do get, like if you don't have any good stability options in your kind of like your sight slash barrel column, that steady rounds can be a good option to compensate. If maybe you end up with plus 10 range, you can throw steady rounds on there to balance things out, and I think it works really well as an option. So do make sure that you kind of bear in mind, your goal is to kind of lean toward stability, but if you get some range, it's not an auto shard. Take a look and make sure that you aren't ignoring potentially a role that's going to work out really well.
Yeah, like if I can get 10 to 15 stability and like 5 range, then I'm pretty happy
Yeah.
with what I've done there. For the traits, doesn't have a ton of great traits in the first slot. Hip fire grip, under pressure, demolitionist. I would actually go with hip fire grip for PvP because since this gun only really needs body shots to kill, it's actually really easy to get kills when hip firing, and hip fire grip just makes it even easier to do that.
Yeah.
It can basically start to feel like the last word, where it's pretty accurate from the hip, and you just use it for that. And then in trait slot 2, it doesn't really have something that I think stands out as the best option. It has quick draw, vorpal weapon, multi-kill clip, rampage. I really like multi-kill clip on sidearms because even the ones that statistically have a low recoil speed, they're still pretty fast by default because it's a sidearm and the recoil is just relatively quick. So I like multi-kill clip. Rampage is also great, especially if you get something like tactical mag, where you increase your mag size and you can, chain back-to-back kills. Because remember, you have 12 bursts by default, and you only need 3 of them to kill someone. So you can definitely get multiple kills. Vorpal weapon, it does a lot of bonus damage. You are in a super dangerous spot if you are engaging like a Sentinel or Striker
Yeah.
with this gun with Vorpal weapon. You can melt it down, but it's look, flat out, you can melt it down, but you are in a very, very dangerous spot using Vorpal Weapon on this gun. I've seen like Cool Guy and stuff just absolutely dominate with it. That's one of those things that it's like good people will be able to use it strongly, but if you are not a good player, if you're not confident in your ability to shred a super up close, then it's going to get you killed more often than it's going to help you.
Yeah, I'd say if you get Vorpal Weapon, I would highly recommend having Hip Fire Grip so that you can be like bunny hopping around somebody, evading attacks while you're, trying to burn them down. I think that's probably your optimal setup if that's your goal. And Hip Fire Grip's just a great perk on this gun in general, so I think that works out pretty well. But otherwise, yeah, The handling is the handling stat is not high, but because it's a sidearm, it's still pretty good. So I think for me, I'm definitely looking for multi-kill clip or rampage as well. I'd get a little bonus damage for the follow-up kills.
And quick draw also exists if quick draw is your thing. I don't find quick draw to be super necessary on a sidearm, mostly because I play sixes. For trials, it can be tremendously helpful to have a quick draw sidearm because then you actually get the feeling that you're using the sidearm the way it was intended, which you pair with a sniper rifle or something, and you snipe someone, someone pushes you, and you're lightning fast able to switch that sidearm and start popping shots off. So it's definitely something to be considered. But overall, I do like the sidearm. I think it's something to chase. I actually would, me personally, and I don't think this is going to be the same case for competitive players, I would actually prioritize grinding this one over Lonesome. That's just my personal opinion. I don't know if it has quite the same skill ceiling as Lonesome, but I think that this is the by far the easier gun to use and a pretty easy gun to get a good roll on.
Yeah.
So I would actually be grinding this one as my preferred sidearm out of this set.
Yeah, if you don't already have a good one, I have like three kind of various perk sets that I'm really happy with on Breach Light, but I'd say, again, I'm already hanging on to three of them. So I guess that's a pretty strong endorsement. Like, I think this gun is worth hanging on to a couple of good rolls from.
So what's the next primary weapon coming
We've
up?
got Optative all the way back from the Vex Offensive in the Season of the Undying. So Optative is a precision hand cannon. It's the 180 RPM. It's an energy hand cannon that is void damage. Like other precision hand cannons, it's got a very favorable recoil direction, high stability, very, very easy to control, and of course it also has the flaws of that archetype: relatively low range, a weaker aim assist stat, relatively small mag, and poor to middling handling. Probably poor, I guess I would say. So yeah, that said, kind of has a lot of negatives within the o hand cannons overall, but these guns are super, super easy to use. And even though right now they are probably not the most competitive archetype, they're still an archetype that I see used fairly regularly. And I think it's because they're just so easy to handle. So the time to kill, the optimal is 1 second. With, I think you, and th this might have changed now. Last time we reviewed this, it was three crits and one body.
I believe it's still
Is
three
it
crits
still
and one
three crits,
body.
one body?
I think you can go down to 2-2 on lower resilience players.
Yeah,
I
okay.
think you can go down to 2-2.
So generally going to be three crits, one body, but those crits are going to be pretty easy to hit. The body shot time to kill is pretty terrible at 1.67 seconds with six bodies. Definitely important to hit your crits. Yeah, so that's where we're at here. Love the recoil direction on these though. They're so vertical, and the bounce is just so tiny.
All right, so then when we look at perks for the gun, you kind of have a couple things that you can choose from, right? Like you can take the classic route of maxing out range, which these guns do not have great range, being their precision archetype. You can take the classic route of maxing out range. You can especially do that on this gun because it is capable of rolling with the rapid hit in the first trait slot. So if you're going to take that route, then you're going to want Hammerforged Rifling and Accuraz rounds in the first two slots. I personally think that that's okay to do on the 180s. I would not generally max out range on any of the other hand cannons because the other hand cannons now, range just doesn't do much as a stat anymore for hand cannons. They compress the range so much that you're going to get a couple of meters out of it at best. That's helpful in the 180s because the range is so bad and because they have such decent stability and recoil by default, that they're really just super easy to handle. They feel more like sidearms than they do hand cannons. And I have a sneaking suspicion that the actual way that they made these hand cannons is they took the precision sidearm archetype and they gave it a hand cannon rate of fire and hand cannon, appearance. And that's pretty much it. And I think that it is actually the precision sidearm, Like, I think that's what the background of it is. But so if you want to go like mix and match and you say, actually, I want a little bit of stability in there, then instead of hammer forged rifling, I would go with polygonal rifling or chambered compensator. You can also do something like small bore or corkscrew, which will mix and match the two. For the magazine, I would still probably stay with accurized rounds because your alternative is steady rounds, which is going to hurt your range. And I don't know if you want to play that game where you're actually making your range worse just to get a little bit more stability on an already pretty decently stable and easy to control gun. Especially because if you get rapid hit in trait slot one, then that's going to basically, you know, give you more stability than any numerical stat is going to give you on its own.
Yeah.
So rapid hit would be my number one thing. And then in trait slot two, kill clip, because if you proc kill clip, you can kill in three shots, your TTK will be 0.67 seconds. It's gonna feel more like the Luna's Howl of old. Problem with all 180s is that the time to kill is 1.0 seconds, which is horrendously slow for a primary weapon. So you're going to have a lot of problems getting that first kill to proc kill clip. But you know, it's not the worst gun ever, but I don't remember the last time I saw a 180 in PvP in the hands of someone who was doing well with it.
Fair criticism, you know, and I can't say that I've seen an optative lately, but I'm pretty sure I have seen a few trusts around. That's, I mean, I think everybody has several copies of trust at this point.
Yeah, and when you really look at it, I mean, Optative is just as good as
It
Trust,
is.
if not a little bit better. I mean, stat-wise, it has better range, it has better stability, it has better reload speed, it has better handling. It has slightly worse aim assist. Actually, I won't say slightly worse aim assist. Trust has pretty substantially better aim assist. And then they pretty much have the exact same recoil direction, the exact same mag size. So the only thing Trust has going for it is higher, you know, aim assist, but you can fix that with some targeting mods on your weapon or some
Yeah.
you know, precision targeting mods on your helmet or something like that. And I mean, I think Optative is a fine gun for a 180, but it is a 180, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there's trade-offs there for sure. You know, the adaptives being so much easier to use right now has just made the precisions feel not quite worth it. So that's a big downside for him.
You know, I finally got myself a hand cannon. So I notoriously do not like hand cannons. I have never liked hand cannons in Destiny PvP. Never once
I'm
liked them.
sorry, I
I
said
finally
adaptives,
got
I meant
myself.
lightweights. But
I finally got myself a hand cannon that I like now in PvP. I had a Dire Promise drop the other day, and normally I just straight up delete them like immediately because I don't even, you know, I don't even care about anything. But I had a Dire Promise drop the other day with Steady Hand for more stability, Flared Magwell for more stability, Opening Shot and Rangefinder, and then also a Stability Masterwork. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give this one a shot because I think that's a pretty good roll.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the damage boosting perks that I normally like on guns, but I think in terms of how the gun feels, this is gonna be a pretty great roll. And oh my God, it is. It is pretty crazy how easy that gun is to use and how reliably I was three tapping people with it. And I was like, ah, I see, this is why people like hand cannons, because it certainly feels good to use. It certainly feels rewarding.
Yeah, I think that's you know, that's the thing with the lightweights right now is that the three tap kill is fast enough that you don't necessarily need to be trying to boost damage so much as you just need to be winning your 1v1s. Which I guess it's kind of been a recurring theme lately. We're gonna have to do some Crucible centric podcasts talking about Crucible skills again in the near future, but yeah, lightweights are in a really, really good place, and that is a role to be jealous of. I guess Bungie heard you liked some stability in your stability.
And they finally gave it to me.
They finally
Well,
gave it to you.
this brings me back to the day. So back in the day in D1, range was basically a totally meaningless stat, because every gun pretty much had nearly unlimited range. So you didn't need it for anything, right? So back in the day in D1, when I first started doing this, all I cared about was stability. I just wanted to max the stability out on every single gun that I got, and I didn't care about any other stat. And I feel like I'm creeping back closer to that level in D2. Not because range doesn't mean anything, because now all the guns have horrendously compressed ranges, right? But the problem is that the range stat just doesn't do enough because the variable range, like when your minimum range is 22 meters and your maximum range is 24 meters, I'm not going to spend all that effort maxing out the range stat, right? You know, if my minimum range is 20 meters and my maximum range is 35 meters, well, yeah, I'm going to look at the range stat a little bit more. But right now, because it's only a couple of meters here or there, and there's other things that you can do that are multiplicative, like zoom and like range finder, and like killing wind, well, I'm going to focus on stability then. Because the stability numerical stat seems to have a lot more of a difference on the feel and handling of a gun, especially on controller, than anything I do to the range does.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that statement right now. Well, that's optative. That is one that I would say, if you've got the guns that you're looking for, I think it's worth trying to get a good roll, and or at the very least hanging on to a good roll if you happen to get one. Because the circle is always spinning, right? It's always going to come back around at some point.
If you want to store a 180, take advantage of the ability to grind one out now.
Yeah.
Get in your vault, leave it there. Because at some point, you never know, Bungie may make 180s killing three headshots like Lunas Howl used to do, right? And then you've got a gun that has a great roll that kills in 0.67 seconds. And it's probably the strongest gun in the Crucible. So, you know, I'm not saying that will happen, but it could.
It's not impossible. Or they'll nerf all the other hand cannons, and 180s will just be the only ones that are usable again.
It'll get the No Land Beyond
That's
treatment,
right.
and everything else gets nerfed so badly that eventually it becomes good.
Oh, the Kinder Guardians don't know. Let's talk about Martyr's Retribution. So this is the wave frame grenade launcher from also Season of the Dawn. It's also a sundial weapon, if I remember correctly, right?
It is indeed.
And so it's kind of in the lightweight grenade launcher category, but it's got that unique frame where if it, you shoot it, it hits the ground and makes a wave shoot out like the one Titan grenade does.
The thermite grenade.
Thermite grenade, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Pretty sure it's even the same animation too,
It's
so.
solar, yeah, it's 100% the same animation. So very high blast radius stat for this weapon. Pretty good velocity, actually, I guess. Excuse me, high velocity at 76. Reload speed is pretty decent at 67, although a grenade launcher can always use some help reloading more quickly. The handling is at 69, pretty darn good for grenade launcher. Inventory aim assist, both pretty high. I'm not sure how aim assist works on a gun like this, but it's got it. Stability is low and totally irrelevant, speaking of. Since you have just a single shot, so this is a gun that I totally did not get the hang of when it first came out. It took me a lot of time to really like get a handle on being able to use it effectively and get lots of multi kills with it. But once I got the hang of it, I realized that it was just incredibly easy to just mow through strikes with. I found it to be a phenomenal PvE weapon on Solar Burn. You just take everything apart, just six seven adds at a time, just burn down. So I'm a big fan of this gun, just on the base function alone. How about you?
I hate all breach action grenade launchers. I hate using them. I hate playing against them. I think it's an interesting gun. It is frustrating to play against in the right hands or in the wrong hands from my perspective. I personally don't think, how would I say this? It is hard pressed to compete with Mountaintop, right? Like Mountaintop is just so incredibly good and really frustrating to deal with. This gun, it would probably be my second option after that. But it is hard pressed to deal with Mountaintop in terms of just pure functionality and usability, which is a bummer. But it is, I think, a much better weapon for players who are not good with Mountaintop if they still want to use a grenade launcher like this. The fact that that thermite charge basically flies out in front of it gives you a lot more leeway to do damage to targets, even if your accuracy isn't quite there. When we're talking perks, because it is a lightweight, you're all, pretty much always trying to direct hit people. A near miss with a lightweight means you're switching your gun, and trying to shoot them with something else, right? So the only way you're going to get that kill is if you direct hit them. So because of that, I pretty much try to max out velocity, because that's what, in my opinion, makes it the easiest to direct hit someone, is a projectile that's flying straighter and truer and faster. So I like quick launch. I like high velocity rounds. I don't even really think it's a competition for those two. In the first trait slot, I love auto loading holster, because then if I do miss and I switch the weapon and I start cleaning someone up with another weapon, pretty much by the time I switch back, it's reloaded. And the biggest drawback of these weapons is the manual reload of putting another shell back in.
Absolutely.
And then in trait two, because I talked about velocity, I really like rangefinder. Rangefinder actually increases the velocity on projectile weapons, which is pretty great. You also have the option of moving target, demolitionist, lead from gold. I don't think it's really close for any of these. I think there is very much like one god roll for this gun, considering what you have offered. It's quick launch, high velocity rounds, auto loading holster, rangefinder.
And the only thing I really want to add there is just a tip as far as your mods go. I think for these breech-loaded grenade launchers, especially if you get auto-loading holster, the most useful mod you can throw on there is quick access sling to allow you to essentially instantly swap to your primary weapon after firing the grenade. I can't count the number of, I've been working. I don't have Mountaintop. I've been working toward it. I've taken a little bit of a break the last couple of weeks here while I'm working on the new season, but I've been working toward it, and I can't count the number of kills I've been able to get by firing a grenade, instantly swapping to a hand cannon, and getting a headshot. It's just extremely, extremely fast and deadly combination. So that's my recommendation. Otherwise, I totally agree.
Yeah, and that brings up a good point. This is probably a fantastic weapon to use to get Mountaintop if you don't already have it.
Yeah.
It's really, really a great gun to use for that. Yeah, I think we can move on to the heavy weapons. We have a machine gun. It is a rapid fire machine gun. Don't see a ton of those. I think we only have one of each element. This is the Void one. It's Temporal Claws. It originally came from the Season Pass level 45 back from Season of the Dawn. The pros, very fast reload speed and above average mag size. The mag size is 75. It also has some neutral stats. The handling and aim assist are just kind of average. And then cons, the range is absolutely terrible. The recoil direction is bad. The stability is bad. Doesn't hold a lot in reserve. The most frustrating thing about this gun for me is that you only get like 20 shots or like 23 shots when you pick up a brick in PvP,
Yeah.
in quick play for specifically where the bricks are shared. And what that means is you run out of ammo in about like half a second. You're just like gone, completely out of ammo. Really, really frustrating. Definitely does not give enough shots to use it. However, I will say that these guns, especially what is it, 21% Delirium is the Gambit one, the Gambit Pinnacle one.
Yeah.
That one in particular is actually really, really good. These guns, if you get ammo, if you run a scavenger and you pick up ammo and you have enough ammo, are actually pretty good in PvP. They're not going to outrange a hammerhead or anything, but if you can get up close to people, you can just mow them down. Like it feels like you're using, Recluse back with Master of Arms is what it feels like you're doing. So I have actually taken this. I actually have one on my character right now, and I've been taking it into PvP and using it as my heavy. I think it's a ton of fun. The only problem I have with it in PvP is the ammo. And obviously the range is terrible, but that's just something you have to play around.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I tend to like these guns more as kind of a PvE option. I try to keep a good PvE role for a heavy machine gun in each energy type, just so that I can always match whatever burns I have. And if I'm feeling like maybe I need to get some ad clear with the heavy, and I also want to be able to do some decent DPS, machine guns just really kind of fill that multi-purpose role really well. And this, it's the void slot. Yeah, so in terms of perks in the barrels, I think the best thing you can do here is get as much range and stability as possible. I would favor stability over range if you have to make a choice. But ideally, I'd like to see both of those going up because they're both pretty horrible.
Yeah.
So
This is one of the rare times where it actually may matter to have both,
yeah.
because if you're trying to do boss DPS, you actually could be getting like damage drop off at boss distances where you're doing DPS on it, so the range might actually help. And normally I say range is a useless stat in PvE. And then secondarily, the stability is so bad, like stability,
It's
it
real bad.
also will help to have stability in PvE because it is really hard to use. And so pretty much any perk that you get, because they all affect stability or range, so just grab any perk, as long as it doesn't hurt the other stat.
Yeah.
For the magazines, you know, ricochet rounds, it's not often that I recommend something like ricochet rounds for PvE, because generally you get way, way better value out of something like flared magwell or appended mag. And those are still absolutely options. For PvE, you know, flared magwell with a fast reload if you're trying to do boss DPS, or appended mag for a greater magazine size are both very useful. But ricochet rounds will also give you range and stability buffs, which we just talked about you needing. And the reason I don't necessarily recommend flared magwell is because in trait slot one, you have so many options for fast reloading, or automatic reloading, or increased mag sizes, right?
Yeah, I guess I would say like firmly planted is a really strong perk, and if you know if you've got like appended mag in your magazine slot, you can get the extra ammo, and then you can run firmly planted, and you can just crouch to make up the difference in terms of your accuracy, your range, your stability, because those are all going to get massive buffs from firmly planted. And you know, in a DPS situation, there's no reason not to just crouch and hold down the trigger. For that matter, even when you're clearing adds, it's not that hard to just crouch. You don't have to be worried that much about trying to dodge enemy fire because most of them are not very accurate. That said, though, auto-loading holster is still an extremely good option if you've got range and stability buffs in the previous two slots. Ambitious Assassin could give you an absolutely ridiculous number of rounds in the mag, which is already 75 at base. So some decent options there. Genesis is not a terrible option to have in PvE. Can be pretty nice when you've got some shielded majors to clear out. And then trade slot two, I think Rampage would probably be my go-to, but Surrounded is also an excellent damage bonus for ad clear. Rangefinder is probably your best bet in PvP, but it can also roll with Eye of the Storm, which as we've discussed recently, it is a very underrated and overlooked perk that provides a pretty serious accuracy bonus in virtually every single gunfight. So, yeah, I think that sums it up. This is, if you don't have a good void machine gun, you now have the opportunity to grind out a good void machine gun.
Yeah. Although if you have a hammerhead's probably better
Well,
in a
yeah.
majority of opportunities. But and then last up is the rocket launcher, also a void heavy weapon. As Bad Omens is the aggressive style rocket launcher, which is the ones that come with a fast base velocity and a kind of lower blast radius, actually a very low blast radius of 55. That being said, what I'm going to try to max out on this is, of course, going to be blast radius. A 55 blast radius is incredibly low for a rocket launcher, and you are going to get a frustrating amount of times when the rocket hits near something and doesn't kill it, and just damages it, right? Because the blast damage is going to drop off so fast from around the center. So I like volatile launch, I like black powder. As far as perks go, there are really only a couple of great perks on rocket launchers, and you pretty much look for the same ones. It's cluster bombs, if you can get it, tracking module, and then for boss DPS, like auto-loading holster. Although this is not a good, rocket launchers are not great right now for boss DPS, right? But if you want to have one sitting in your vault for later, then auto-loading holster. Interestingly, for Gambit specifically, you can go tracking module Genesis, because since it is void and the envoys are void, you can shoot it directly at their shields, break their shields, immediately get a shot reloaded back into the rocket, do the same to the other envoy, right? That is the one weird niche use that I have found for this specific rocket launcher. Outside of that, if you run volatile launch, black powder, tracking module, cluster bombs, it's okay for, you know, it's okay for PvP. It's not great. I think you're much better off with like a Sins in the Past, or like one of the Sleepless, like one of the high impact, you know, 95 blast radius guns and then trying to max out their velocity, then I think you are starting with this high velocity and trying to max out blast radius, right? So personally, I mean, shoot, I think you're even probably better with like the Hawk A precision rocket launchers that come with tracking by default, you know, because then you can focus on a lot of other stuff and you don't have to waste an entire perk getting tracking. So unfortunately, I don't think that this is a great rocket launcher. If you can get pretty much the one or two rolls that are needed for it, you can probably never think about it again.
Yeah, I think Roar of the Bear is my go-to for PvP with like 100 blast radius. But there is, so there's one thing I do want to throw in about this one. In terms of using it in PvE situations, having a lower blast radius can actually be advantageous because it can keep your cluster bombs more closely centered. So if you're trying to do boss damage, it'll prevent them from spreading as far. So in that situation, you would want to focus purely on velocity, which is also going to help make sure that that rocket gets to where it's going faster, and hopefully the boss is not able to like pull some sudden juke and evade it. Now you've also got alloy casing in the magazine slot, which is going to do some bonus damage on impact. So that is another great DPS option.
That's impact casing.
Oh, impact casing. Shoot, you're right. Well, in that case, high velocity rounds is the easy choice. I don't know if this one even has impact casing. I thought it did. It does not. It is alloy casing. That is my bad. Yeah, so one thing that you can do here, if you do want to use this for PvE damage, you can take advantage of the low blast radius and just lean wholly into velocity and tracking. The lower blast radius is going to keep your cluster bombs from spreading out as far, which means more of them are going to hit the boss that you're trying to hit. So that makes it somewhat more effective. Unfortunately, it does not have impact casing available in the magazine slot, which means it doesn't get that opportunity to do bonus damage on impact. Makes it slightly less favorable as a PvE, like DPS option. So I think ultimately what it comes down to is this gun is really pretty good for like Gambit. Like you said, you can, you know, if you get it with Genesis, it's great at taking out Envoys. And other than that, it's kind of, you know, it's got all the right perks for PvP, but it just isn't quite in the right archetype. So I'd call this very middle of the road. If you just don't, for some reason, have a good rocket launcher and you want to farm one, this is, you know, it's usable. It's best I can say for it.
All right, well, there's the weapons. That's all 10 weapons, guys. So you've got some good ones in there. I really think the pyramid-focused weapons are the more preferable, with the exception of Gnawing Hunger, which, of course, is a dominant force in PvP right now. I think that's it for this episode. So hopefully within the next week we'll have some new stuff added to the game that we can talk about. I know there's some stuff that has been mined in the API and in the database that we have not yet seen, so I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, in the meantime, we'll see you guys next week.
All right, peace.
Bye.